Oh, stop it.
This is Talkin' Audio.
Good day, good listener. What's happening? Matt Robinson with you in the TCA studio in beautiful Bytown, Canada. Hope you're having a great week so far. We got lots more still to come for you this week as well. Thank you so much for tuning in here today. Make sure you're subscribed to the pod wherever you're hearing us right now and following along on social media at Talkin' Audio. Lever Sage will be here in a couple of minutes. He is not here right this second. We'll explain that in just a couple minutes. But wanted to outline a little bit. I had a couple thoughts on a couple things, outline what's coming up here on the podcast over the next little bit. Jeff Fayette will be here on Friday morning. Certainly, if you're a Leafs fan or someone active on Leafs Twitter, you're aware of him. Also, he's the guy who comes in here the same week as Graham Nichols every week. At the beginning of the season, Graham takes care of an Ottawa Senators season preview, while Jeff takes care of a Toronto Maple Leafs season preview. So he does a great job covering the Leafs. He's going to help me tee up Leafs and Bruins once again, in actually the first time in, it's been 5 years. We faced them in 2018, 2019. So it's been a minute, but all those familiar feelings come rushing back, right? When you see that old flame, maybe less of an old flame and someone who used to just burn your ass repeatedly. Jeff will be here on Friday to help get you set for that series. So stick around for that. I got to be honest with you, and I think you've probably heard me say it a couple times on the podcast, given the choice between facing Florida and facing Boston, this is sort of what I preferred coming from a Leaf perspective. Now, that's not to say I think the Leafs are a shoe-in to win this. It's not even to say I think the Leafs are the favorite to win this. I don't believe they are. I believe Boston will be the betting favorite, and I think that's fair. But I thought this was a better matchup for Toronto than Florida was, and I think that was bared out a little bit on Tuesday night when Toronto played Florida. And a good first period for Toronto, but it kind of went downhill after that. Now it's one regular season game at the end of the season. While, you know, you can argue a little bit, you can debate a little bit about how much everybody cared and what that game meant to different people, whether they were trying to push the puck too hard to Austin Matthews to get that 70th goal, things like that. But I thought all year that Boston was a better matchup. And while I was saying it, Toronto lost to Boston every single time we faced them this year. So I'm not sure that I have a real great leg to stand on at this point. I do sort of agree that you throw things out at the regular end of the regular season, and it's different in the playoffs. I look at it, and you'd like to think, with Toronto having John Tavares and Austin Matthews up the middle, and Boston's now top two centers being Pavel Zacha and Charlie Coyle, you should have the edge there. Can Mitch Marner saw off David Pastrnak? Can William Nylander be as good as Brad Marchand? Those aren't unreasonable requests. Now, when you get down into other parts of the game on the back end, I think you would favor Boston's defense, certainly. You would favor their goaltending as well. So it's not to say that I think Boston is outmatched here. They're not. They finished higher than Toronto. But I think there are reasons to believe that Toronto can make this interesting. And so, I think they're good enough to beat Boston, but perhaps not good enough that would be my prediction as to what's going to happen. But we'll get into more of that with Jeff. It was interesting to watch the last couple days play out. Boston played Washington on Monday night, and it didn't look like they were particularly interested. That led to a lot of people suggesting that, you know, maybe Boston was trying to face Toronto, was trying not to finish first, trying to set that up. I don't have a whole lot of time for that theory. Now, Boston did go on and then lose to Ottawa on Tuesday night. But I watched the third period of that Boston-Ottawa game, and it sure looked to me like Boston was trying. They did not appear to be phoning that in. I think at one point I remember hearing that there had been a 14, 15-minute stretch where Boston had outshot Ottawa 20-0. So it sure looked like they were giving it an honest effort, but regardless of whether or not they were trying or not, that is the matchup you have now. So like I said, Jeff and I'll go a little more in depth on that. When I look at the other series in the East, the West isn't totally set as I sit here early Wednesday evening. The Western matchups aren't set yet. The East is. Florida versus Tampa will be interesting. That should be a good kind of rivalry series. They've faced each other before. There is obviously a built-in rivalry there, so I think that'll be interesting. Toronto-Boston, for me, Obviously doesn't need any storylines. I know they're there, but Toronto's the team I was going to be watching anyway, so that one is of interest to me. The other two in the East, yeah, not doing a whole lot for me, to be honest with you. Carolina versus the Islanders and the Rangers versus the Capitals. I don't know. Neither of those are particularly compelling. I didn't really want to see Ovechkin get in, so I'll be pretty fine with it when the Rangers roll right over them. As far as Islanders, Hurricanes go, yeah, no, very little interest whatsoever. So hopefully the West produces a couple other good matchups. Winnipeg and Colorado, Rob and I talked about earlier in the week, and that'll be solid for sure. If you did miss it on Wednesday morning, we did drop another episode of the podcast talking strictly about the end of the Senators season, everything that went wrong this year, these sorts of things. That was actually audio cut out of the Sunday recording that was meant to be in the Monday show, but I thought we'd hold it till after the last Sens game. That was going to be plenty long anyway. So a little bonus audio there if you didn't happen to catch it. That's episode 1295. So go back and check that out. As far as the schedule goes, Sportsnet has announced that Toronto-Boston Game 1 will be Saturday at 8 o'clock, which is lame, but suggests it's going to be a late night. I'm seeing some reports that some of these series won't start till Monday or Tuesday, so that's, I don't know how true that is, but we'll see. I would say this, though, knowing Sportsnet and knowing how, for whatever reason, they are married, even in the playoffs, to Saturday night. And all the ratings suggest this is no longer anywhere near as big of a deal. Throughout the regular season, Saturday nights draw bigger than other nights. So I get that. In the playoffs, with the Leafs, the ratings are there whether it's Saturday night or not. But they will go to their grave fighting for Saturday night. So I fully expect, and I put this out on Twitter, that you should expect on Saturday game one, Monday game two, and then a completely needless break between game two and three. So instead of game three happening on Wednesday, it goes to Thursday. And then, oh, look, we're back on turn to play on Saturday night again. So I don't know why they care so much. It's not a big deal when it comes to the Leafs, but that's what they want. So you're going to take a break there for no reason. I would be shocked if that's not the way this plays out. So keep an eye out for that. It's not like travel from Boston to Toronto is particularly difficult. But hey, let's have an off day anyway. So, or an extra off day as the way this will shake loose. Jays just dropped one in fairly painful fashion to the Yankees here. They still take that series 2-3, but they do lose this game to the Yankees 6-4. Had a lead of 4-2 right up to the 8th inning and pissed it away. I don't know. Everybody on my timeline seems pretty pissed off, but I thought our buddy Nick Ashbourn summed it up pretty well, that on this homestand, you've now won three series in a row. Your rotation is coming off fantastic. You've won 6 out of 9 games. You just took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. He said the vibes must be immaculate, and the vibes are not immaculate. And look, I've said this to a couple of our guests on the show. I kind of ride the roller coaster here a little bit. I am a bit of an emotional up and down guy, but I do understand it's a six month season, and you can't hate every minute of it. And so you just took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. Yeah, it's annoying the way you lost game three here, but I don't know. I'm feeling a whole lot better about this team than I was before the homestand started. You're going to go west here now and play San Diego. That's not going to be easy, but you took care of business here at home. You did what you should do. And so, you know, I saw a lot of people online ripping on the way the bullpen was used here today. Well, afterwards, it became fairly obvious, even as you were watching, but John Schneider comes out and talks about the fact that, yeah, Chad Green wasn't good to go. Romano wasn't good to go. Garcia wasn't good to go. So you run out of options pretty quick. And, you know, they get stuck with what you're stuck with. And sometimes, you know, you'd held Aaron Judge hitless for the entire series, which is not easy. He gets one there late in the inning. You know he's due. So sometimes things just go this way. But I'm feeling way less down about the Blue Jays right now than a lot of other people seem to be. To each their own. But I sort of felt like they turned things around here a little bit. It felt like they had a better approach at the plate. Dalton Varsho suddenly is hot as anything. Our buddy Andrew Stoughton pointing out that over the course of the homestand, Dalton Varsho goes from a 29 WRC plus, which would be just about one of the worst players of all time, to now 129, which is, you know, well above average. So it's early. These things are still moving pieces. Yeah, I think there's still things to be worried about, things I'm not quite sold on. But you've just won three series in a row, 6 games out of 9, and took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees, who had been red hot before they came in here. So I'm feeling a little better than the rest of you, I got to be honest, but that's not always the case. I've come in here for a long time and been saying when I'm frustrated, so you do you, I guess. As for today, Lee is on the podcast, but Lee is not in the studio. You're going to hear a piece of audio that we recorded back in early December, to be honest with you. This is the week before Lee was leaving for Italy. We weren't sure how easy it was going to be for him to connect with us while he was over there, what his internet would be like, what, you know, what his schedule would be like. And so we thought, why don't we try and get one or two things done that if there's a week or two while he's over there that he can't do the show and maybe I can't find somebody to substitute for him or whatever it might be, we'll still have something. And so we recorded this, like I said, back in December. It was intentionally done as something that wouldn't go stale, right? It's hard to talk sports and then release it 3 or 4 months later because everything has changed. There's been trades, we've learned results, all these sorts of things. So it was going to have to be something that we'd keep because he was going to be gone for a couple of months. And so that's what we did. We talked a little tragically hip. And we've done that before on the podcast, Rob and myself, certain other guests, certainly my favorite band of all time. The same can be said for a lot of people I know who love the Tragically Hip. And one of Lee's favorite bands as well. So we thought, well, why don't we trade some Tragically Hip stories? Kind of rank maybe our 5 favorite songs, how they tie into a couple of stories, and just go back and forth talking a little Tragically Hip. So Lee was going to come in again this week and then had to cancel again this week. And so, you know, in the interest of getting something out for you guys here for a Thursday, I thought, you know what? I still got that Tragically Hip audio. We're going to throw that out there and let you have it today. I think Lee's coming next week. We'll see. But for now, you get a little Tragically Hip talk with me and Lee Versage. Enjoy that. But with that, let's get into it. Lee Versage and I thought we'd talk a little hip on the podcast.
I am so excited about this one.
Honestly, man. I've always got time for this. Rob and I have done this a couple times. I've done solo episodes. This was 100 years ago around when Gord passed away on documenting the 11 times I've seen them, what the occasion was, where we were, who I went with, just because, fuck it, why not? Love talking Tragically Hip, man.
They are the band of my lifetime. Do you know what I mean? Like, from 14 years old, I was in grade 9 and a very...
He was in grade 5.
What's that?
You were in grade 5, held back several times.
4. We can all do the math. 9 and 5. No. I was in grade 9, very impressionable and nervous because I went to, and I didn't realize schools didn't work this way anymore, but I don't know what kind of school you went to, but I went to a school
Clown
that...
college.
No, an elementary school that was kindergarten to grade 8.
So we had out in the country, North Oshawa, right?
Listen, I lived in Markham, okay? Yeah. Not that far away from...
No, but we weren't in Oshawa. We were north of Oshawa.
Perhaps.
That was east of Oshawa. Great classic barn out there for hockey. Ice cold, wear your sweater if you're playing in the Orono Arena.
The Orono Arena.
Yeah, but... we went to one tiny little school for kindergarten grade 1, then grades 2 through 8 were at a slightly bigger school, and then, yeah, off to high school after.
Well, and now the way it works, right, a lot of people do middle school.
Yes, like where, 1 to 4, then 5,
well, even
six,
7 to 8.
Or 6
like
to 8.
A lot of 7 to 8s now are actually in the high schools, just separated from the rest
of the
group.
But, I mean, our school only had 350 kids in it, so it... We didn't need to split them up into too many different buildings.
Yeah. And basically, we're old when we say this.
100%, man. It was a one-room school.
All I'm getting at is that kindergarten to grade 8, my whole life was in one school. When I went to the next school in high school, it was a drastic change.
Oh, yeah.
It was not – like the way they do it now I think is better. If you're 7, 8, you go to that school, but you're separated into a different area. But you kind of get the gist of what it's going to be like. Mm-hmm. I had no gist of what it was going to be like. And so the only friends that I had at the time were a lot of like through sports, right? So sure. A lot of the guys I played on the hockey team with, were my friends, and some of them went to different elementary schools, so I was excited to see them. But that was part of the grade 9 group, was a lot of the hockey teammates.
Right.
And a guy named Paul Webb was his name, and his dad was the soccer coach. He was a great guy. He is a great guy. And he was always a little bit eclectic when it came to listening to different things. And he handed me this cassette one day. I was in grade 9. It was 1989. And he said, there's one song I need you to listen to. So I want you to go home. Here's my cassette. I don't have another one. Bring it back tomorrow. But I need you to listen to this song. And that song was New Orleans is Sinking.
Okay.
On Up to Here.
Yep.
I fell in love with the Tragically Hip that night.
And that's one of those songs that I think everybody knows, like maybe their most well-known song ever, like the big hit, but everybody needs an entry point, right? And it's one of those songs that now, I'm similar to you, that might have been one of the songs that very early on grabbed me, but now it probably isn't in my top 25, but it might have been the song that brought me into the hip, right? Like,
which I would argue probably should be in your top 25 if it was a song that actually brought you into.
That's a fair enough point, man, honestly.
But
you know what I'm saying?
It's not my top five
either.
You
brought me into this library and I just discovered, oh my God, this is amazing.
It's not my top five, which we're going to talk about, but it is the song that brought me into the Tragically Hip.
Right.
And there was a place called The Concert Hall, which for those who lived in Toronto, it's not there anymore. It was Yonge and Bloor, like just north of Yonge Street on Bloor Street. It was a old cottage-like.
It was iconic. Like a lot of great bands played that venue.
Yeah, but it was a dump.
Oh, yeah. As most of them are, right? The most famous.
Right.
These are rarely palaces.
I'd have to go back and look at the dates. I'm not sure whether it was like a week or a month, but it was very, very soon after Road Apples came out.
Okay. So early 90s.
It was 91.
Okay.
And I was 16 years old and I went to this concert hall to see the Tragically Hip, and I had never been so stoked. And it was more than I ever thought it was going to be. I've never sweat so much in my life.
Yeah.
They had no air conditioning.
No.
I was up in sort of the second deck looking over. And I'll just never forget it. Road Apples came out. I knew within a day or two every word of every song on the album. And I got to go see the Tragically Hip in concert at the Concert Hall in Toronto in 1991. That was my first time I ever saw them. I have many, many, many stories after that.
Sure.
But that was the first time, and it will be imprinted in my brain for the rest of my life. What about you?
So I was a little late to the party. I'm obviously a little bit younger than you, but even for my own age.
You'll have to rub it in, dude. Yeah. Like, come on.
At 91, I was a grade
a twinkle
five.
Twinkle in your eye. Excellent. You weren't a twinkle.
No, I was not still a twinkle.
That's fine.
But it was... Everybody remembers the big SARS stock in 2023, right? That was, the Rolling Stones and poor Justin Timberlake didn't do so well. Or AC/DC, all that stuff. But a month or two before that, there was an earlier SARS concert that was supposed to be like basically what the bigger one became. But like, Toronto's safe to visit. Here's all these stars. And they had a Saturday of dueling venues. I was over at the Dome, and Our Lady Peace played there. The Swollen Members played there.
Okay.
Avril Lavigne and The Hip were the headliner. Over at the ACC was a more contemporary or adult concert, like Sarah McLachlan was there, like Katie Lang, like these sorts of of artists. But they went back and forth. So our show would go on and maybe Avril Lavigne would play her set, and then they would put up on the Jumbotron what was happening at the ACC, and you could watch if you wanted to go get a beer or a meal or whatever you wanted to do, and then come back and the ACC would watch our show. Well, so that was the first time I saw them. Now, it's, the dome is not great for audio. I may be being generous when I say that.
Yeah.
And at the time,
I would agree.
I went with six or eight friends. And at the time, I wasn't yet a huge fan, but my buddies were into it. I was still in my poser punk rock phase, right? But I wanted to go see this. I liked
when
a lot of
these.
When
did you leave it? Have you left it?
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm a poser for a lot of other things. I was getting into them because a couple of my buddies that I grew up with were into them. And so it was growing up, and I was looking forward to seeing them. But if I'm being honest with you, we left early. Nobody else that I was there with cared at all.
Wow.
And we were like, well, I guess we'll go catch the GO train. And so my first time seeing The Hip, which would become my favorite band ever, we left early to catch the train.
Wow.
I know. Not a great start, man.
That is not what I expected. You know what? Good for you.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that, it's an interesting memory. But, that was one of the first of 11 times I ended up seeing them. So we sort of thought we would each kind of list five songs.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a straight countdown. We'll just kind of work our way through it and kind of tell any stories or recollect whatever we've got here. I don't know if you have yours in any particular order. I'll be honest with you, I really don't. I have the five songs that came to me because I've done this exercise once or twice before. And actually the one time we tried to get it down to seven, and the guy I was doing it with, I texted at some point and I said, look, I'm at 12 and I can't cut anymore.
I can't do it.
This has already been brutal.
Incredible.
And I can't cut any further.
Yeah.
But we've come up with five here. Why don't you hit me with your first one here first?
All right. So again, high school obviously is a very influential time in a lot of people's life. And I also want to say that while I was in, I want to say, did you go through OAC?
Yeah.
Okay. So did I.
Grade 13.
It's not a great thing.
AKA the victory lap.
Yeah, it's not, but it wasn't at the time.
It wasn't at the time. Like, but I had a fairly, I was taking two OAC Englishes and OAC History. And I think I had a co-op for one term or whatever, but
okay.
There was a lot of free time.
Let me rephrase. It might have been, but I don't think I realized at the time that it was.
Right.
It was just part of what.
And I loved what I took that year. Like the co-ops I could take or leave, but the two OAC Englishes are probably, sorry, good listener, why you're hearing me right now.
But I was also, I just want to tell you how, before. It's a whole other story. The most influential time in my life as a teenager, sports and music and everything that really shaped my life happened between like 1990 and 1994.
Right.
Like that was my time in music and life in.
Seeing Bret Hart become champion.
In.
92.
Okay. Yeah. No. I wasn't even referring to wrestling, which is.
But when I think of that era, I think of Bret Hart. So
I won't bore you in a sports debate, but remind me to bring up another time how many championships my team's won from like 91 to 95 and then never basically won again in the rest of my life. seriously, it's actually insane.
All of us had our best, most glorious days in high school. Like.
Yeah, I know.
We've never been that successful again.
Ever.
Ever.
So, also, Saturday, July 24th, 1993.
Okay. Blue Jays, White Sox.
No, I have a ticket to another roadside attraction.
Okay, yeah.
At the Markham Fairgrounds.
So, this was a tour The Hip put on for a couple summers with them and other. I was going to say Canadian acts. It wasn't limited to Canadian acts. It was just bands that they liked to come and open these festivals for them.
Yeah. I'm an early birthday.
Yeah.
In January. So I was actually older than most people. And at the time, a bunch of my friends went to the Catholic school. There was, you know, the public school and the Catholic school. And we all kind of hung out together. So I ended up going. A lot of those people graduated and their prom was more important to them the year before mine. And those of us at the public school.
Right.
So I ended up going to their prom, and the after party at the prom was in a barn in the middle of a field. And it was the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
Literally, it was the greatest thing ever. And I remember, and this song is not making my top. I'm just telling you the story of like seeing them in the summer.
It's going to be a long show.
It is. It's the Tragically Hip, man. Hearing Blow It High Dough at that point play in the barn and people going crazy for it. And but afterwards, there is a sort of a point to.
I would hope so.
Oh, don't always think that that there is. I mean, don't always think that. But on that first album, well, the first album. Sorry.
Oh my gosh!
I know, because up to here, up to here was the first album that I knew of.
Yeah,
but they had a previous album.
Yeah, to self-titled.
That, yeah. Self-titled called Tragically Hip. But it was after that, during kind of the Road Apples, and then Fully Completely had come out at that point. So Pigeon Camera to me,
oh, that's a great song,
was my song, and I loved Pigeon Camera, and I ended up remembering how significant it was at this after party,
right
at the prom. The Blow High Dough was significant for everyone going crazy, but Pigeon Camera was significant. And I've listened to that song a million times, and I love it more every time I hear it. And I don't know how many songs I can tell you from any artist that I feel that way about. I love Pigeon Camera.
That song is off Fully Completely.
Yeah.
And it is... Obviously, that is the album, right? Like that, it's fantastic. The one that had probably the most hits of anything the Hip have ever done, and like that's it's not in my top five. It's probably not in my top, but everything about that album, start to finish, is just
it's significant to me personally, and it's one of those songs that you know people grow in and out of music, artists, and songs. I never grew out of that song, so. It's probably at the back end, but it's in my top five of all-time Tragically Hip songs. And I will say we're going to talk a lot here about the Hip and how significant I think they are in Canadian history and what a lyricist that Gord Downie is and understanding the history of this country as part of what they did. I am not the most lyric-based music
right
guy. I'm a little bit more about how the music makes me feel.
Sure.
As opposed to, and I get like people listen to music for all different reasons. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of people that listen to music for the exact lyrics and how it hits them personally. I get that. Some music does that to me. Most music for me ends up about the song and how it makes me feel. The lyrics might be part of it, but it's not all of it.
Yeah.
Pigeon Camera makes me feel every time I hear it.
Yeah, it can trigger a time and a place, a memory, right, that can put you back there.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that.
So it's in my top five. I don't know where it is, but it's in my top five.
So I don't want to tell the same story twice. Would you allow me to hit two songs here, kind of a snake draft?
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to start with Long Time Running.
Oh, what a song.
And
what a song.
It is absolutely terrific. And the reason that it probably sits a little higher than it otherwise would have is, as most longtime listeners of the show know, back in 2011, I had a kidney transplant. And for a couple of years leading up to that, like the kidney transplant comes on the heels of a couple of rough years, right? Things haven't gone well.
Yeah.
We're trying to get a transplant. I've been doing dialysis three times a week. It's a mess and I'm miserable and, you know, everything's on hold. I'm just not in a good place. And I get very lucky that my uncle is able to donate a kidney as a living donor, obviously. And I'm even more lucky because he is close enough in a lot of, his blood type, he's O, so he can give to anybody. But because we're family, right, we're bloodline, a lot of the enzymes and things like that they have to calculate match up. And they won't do a transplant unless if you have only one of four, they won't do it. Two of four, they do it, but it's complicated. Three of four is like a miracle, and if you get it, you end up like me, where you're on very few drugs compared to most people, and he was three of four, right, of the things they need to match up. So I got very lucky. The only people who get four of four are identical twins. So at the end of this, I go in, I have the transplant, I'm groggy as shit coming out of it, and I'm back upstairs in the room that I'm going to have to stay in overnight, obviously, and my parents are there. And my sister's down, and, you know, we're sort of talking, but I'm just out of it, right? Drugged and whatever else. But I'm sort of half coming around, but visiting hours are over and they're being told to leave. And so my mom says to me, before we go, is there anything you need or that you want us to get for you or whatever? And I just said, make sure my iPod is, I can reach it, right? Like, I'm going to want that. And so they left, and I kind of sat there for a couple minutes by myself. And when I put my music on, and all I did was just hit shuffle, and it gave me the hips long time running. And for whatever reason, I mean, obviously there's a little bit of just coincidence, but if you're one of those people who likes to read a deeper meaning into music and lyrics and things like that, that was the first song that came on. And that's just how it felt. Like the end of this hellacious, like the next couple days weren't going to be any picnic either, but the worst of it was over. And so long time running was just how it had felt, right? Trying to get this done and get out of this, whatever you'd want to call it, situation I'd been in. And obviously I'd had some help, but there'd been some heartbreak. There'd been some other things that had fallen through. And yeah, just felt about right. And the fact that came on, and I don't remember much else. I passed out. I did call a friend after that and just let her know I was okay and things like that. But yeah, long time running. Not to get too heavy there or anything, but that was the first one out of the transplant, and that felt good.
That's incredible. I am a believer that things do happen for a reason, and something like that can be instilled in you to remember it and keep going and do all that stuff. Yep. I think we're all grateful that you shared that a little bit, but it's... If you got four stories that are better than that,
I don't have four stories better than that. I'm like,
how is this not number one?
No.
I got a tear coming down in my eye. You better be a good storyteller four more. But as you said, music ultimately is made for people to latch on to in significant moments in their life.
Yep.
And you attach certain music to that, and for you to be able to attach that and then have that song come on and
just unreal, man. And like the next one I remember being something stupid like Ironic by Alanis Morissette, and you're like, all right, well, whatever, but this moment is over, I guess. But
no, just, it was ironic.
It's a shuffle,
it was ironic that long time running came on. So, it's just the explanation of why the hip was on. But that's unbelievable. But
I'm not necessarily a spiritual person. I'm not but like a lot of people would just go, yeah, you have a lot of hip in your playlist. It shouldn't shock you that you hit shuffle it. So I get those people too. But in that moment, you're
come on,
this is fucking perfect, right? And you just sort of sit back and let
you bring those other people to me, and then I'll tell you that is the right thing to have happened at the right time.
Yeah. So if we fast forward, that was February 10th, 2011. June 25th of 2011. The Hip are playing in Bob Cajun. The one and only time. Hey, what if the Hip ever, you know that song, Bob Cajun? What if they ever played there? And it's this tiny town of like less than 4,000 people. But I grew up there. We as a family, when I was a really young kid, we had a cabin cruiser, like a boat. We'd go up and down the Trent Severn, right? Across these lakes, Sturgeon Lake, Pigeon Lake, Cameron, all up and down, Fenland Falls, Lindsay, and all over the place. And so that's sort of where I grew up. And then
By the way, did you know, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but do you know that, so a lot of my family that I have left is all step family, step parents' family.
I think we talked about some of them being. Oh no, you saw Three Days Grace in Norwood.
Yes. Norwood Fair.
Yes.
But they are my family, so I say that when I explain it. But they're my family,
right?
I also went and did houseboats, up and down the Trent.
It's awesome.
System and everything that you're talking about, I did.
Yeah.
Which I think is crazy.
It really is. And it's a great way to spend your summers as a kid, right? You're just swimming off of God knows what.
Incredible.
Yeah,
incredible.
So after we sort of finished boating, we moved over and we rented, we all call it the boathouse, and it is a boathouse, but above it, it had a small cabin. And this is out in front of my uncle's place, also on Sturgeon Lake in Bob Cajun. And our families, you know, would spend a couple of summers together and this and that. So I had this tie already to Bob Cajun. Then you end up getting into the Hip. They, of course, have the song Bob Cajun, which Gord would later say it was just a word to rhyme with. It just fit. Like, it could have been any town.
Oh,
it was just,
so disappointing to those in Bob Cajun.
Right. But they announce in March, I believe, of 2011 that they're going to play a show on Pigeon Lake in just outside Bob Cajun. And I called my cousin, who still, like I said, we used to rent the cabin in front of my uncle's place. My cousin is obviously his son. And I called him about an hour after the announcement was made. My cousin answers the phone. He's like, I've been waiting for you. I'm like,
I knew you were going to call.
Yeah. Like, are we going to the Hip and do we have a place to stay? And he goes, yep. Like, we're all good here. And so my birthday is June 22nd. I invite some friends down. He has some friends down. We have friends and family from all over the place going to this show. And to me, that was like my first, like my favorite band on my birthday weekend after going through the kidney stuff. Right. And so
incredible.
Yeah. And so being there, this is going to be cheesy. And I know it's another like radio hit. But being there when they played Bob Cajun and everyone sang Bob Cajun in Bob Cajun, then back to the cottage afterwards for the party and stuff. It just the way it all kind of came together couldn't have been any more perfect.
What was the date again?
June 25th, I believe, 2011. And it was amazing, huh?
I'm only laughing because ask me at some other point what I was doing on June 25th, 2011.
Okay.
I actually have a...
You were probably at the NHL draft or something? Or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the first time ever.
Yeah.
With AJ.
Yeah. Broadcasting from a closet.
No, that was Philadelphia.
Okay.
But getting kicked out of hotels and then going back to the hotel because they offered soft, warm cookies and AJ needed his second and third and fourth cookie.
Sure.
And then after we got kicked out of the hotel and into the proper hotel that all the rest of the players were staying at and all the NHL, AJ insisted of going back there.
Right.
To get his soft, warm cookie and pretending using different names to get like more cookies and... Oh, my God. Your story's so much better.
No, we'll be coming back to that at some point on the podcast, yeah, for sure.
I'm sure we will. But again, what a moment for you, right?
Yeah.
Like to be able to...
My cousins or my sisters are there. My friends are there.
Celebrates like, the wrong word because you still
No,
had
it's
some
the
things.
Right word. This was...
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like to me, the rest of that is now all in the past. Here's my band on my birthday in a place that I... grew up summering, which is such a douchey term.
It's just an old term.
Yeah.
You sound like you're 90. I summered in...
Right, in Nantucket or whatever. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. That's what this was. With all these people who I'd grown up with and some of my closest friends then and family in this place with that band, celebrate was the right word. That's what we did that weekend. It was incredible. And one last thing on it. My uncle had just earlier that spring done a full... renovation of the cottage. Like it was spectacular, like brand new or whatever. And so on the drive home on Sunday, I texted my uncle and just said, hey, thank you so much for, you know, clearing out, let us all use the place for the weekend. So by the way, love the renovation. It doesn't look anything like the last time I saw it. And he goes, just tell me it still looks the same as it did when you arrived.
Right. That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't look anything like it did Friday when we got there.
Sorry about that. You're gonna have to start over. So those are my first two there.
But see, that's what the beauty And it's tough to say it this much and mean it, but I actually do. This is what music is.
Yeah.
Music is just a tie to significant moments that happen over the course of people's lives.
100%.
And those two stories about how meaningful they are to you and how much the Tragically Hip are involved in them is incredible. And I go back to another roadside attraction in July of 1993 because I was there and I didn't know anything about Midnight Oil.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But Midnight Oil ended up being the sub-headliner for the Tragically Hip that night. And I ended up probably following Midnight Oil for the next 5 years, like I loved their stuff. But I was always a guy who listened to music and I always loved the hits.
Yeah.
But I always loved, like, the worst argument to me in all of music is that song is overplayed. I hate it. It's like, okay, well, yes, the song probably is overplayed, whatever song you're talking about, but you used to love it. It's still the same song.
Yep.
It didn't change. Just because it got played too much doesn't mean the song changed. And so I always gravitated towards the other stuff early because I was interested as a young teenager in, okay, I don't know why I thought about it like this, but with all the bands, it was like, well, these are your hits and these are the songs that are playing on the radio. But what are the songs from your album that aren't being played that you were proud enough to put on? You thought were good enough to represent you and what people think of you when you listen to 12 or 13 songs on an album. Why is it that you picked this and you did this? And not every song in every album, right? You love and...
No.
But...
Sometimes you're just doing your 9 to 5, got to fill this thing.
Yeah. But I go back to Up to Here and... Opiated was a song,
great song
for me. And you know what? When you
We're
say
gonna do this every time.
Yeah,
I'm
when
sorry.
You say your songs, I'm like, oh my God, how do I not have that song on my list? Like, how could I have left off Long Time Running? I love Long Time Running so much, and it's not my top five, but
if you ask, if we asked each other to do this again in 6 months, we'd probably have five you'd remember different stories or you'd be in a different mindset or whatever. Like, there's 40 songs that could be in my top five.
And every time you say this, I'm like, oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
And then at least for the first two songs that I've said, you've been, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But Opiated for me was the song that was associated with what at the time, again, this is kind of grade 9, grade 10. You might like New Orleans is Sinkin', but real hip fans who understand music. Because as a grade 9, 14-year-old, I understood music.
Sure you did.
Or so I thought.
Yeah.
But Opiated was the one song for me that stuck out from the album to go – it was always – I was arguing with people. Why isn't this song played on? Why didn't this song make it more? Listen to how great this song is. And again, I go back to a couple of memories that I have with, you know, certain people when I was young. But at the time, this song was, if you were a hip fan, because back then, again, in 89 and 90, there were cassettes.
Yep.
I have a great story when we talk about a different band, how, put it this way, ask me about teachers selling albums and cassettes to their students because the students couldn't get them. So the teachers went out and bought them all and sold them at a higher price and gouged the students. Yeah. But that happened when I was going to high school. But this song was the song that if you were at least in the group that thought that they understood music, that's what I would call it. It was part of the lore of the band of like, if you don't like this song, you don't really understand the hip. You like New Orleans is sinking and Blow a High Dough is this and 38 years old, never kissed a girl and like catchy little, but this is music. And it doesn't mean it is. It just means that since that time, that song stuck with me and it ended up being 2007 where I had not double back surgery, but I had two back surgeries in 3 months. And I could not.
It's opiated.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I couldn't get up. It does tie to sports, which we'll talk about another time. My whole kind of life story of getting up too quickly from the first back surgery because I thought my big moment was being on community television calling a Senators game because I was asked to do it the first time ever and I couldn't do it because I had back surgery. And I then watched the game on television, watching somebody else do what I was supposed to do and was like, okay, well, that's not happening again. I got up and ended up doing a game the next week, blew my back out again and had to have surgery 3 months later again. But at the time, when I was flat on my back and opiated and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
But the song came on in some very tough spots for me. And I don't even mean tough spots from a time where I actually had some people or a person in my life that I thought cared a lot about me and came to see me and basically made fun of me that I couldn't get up and why I wasn't entertaining and why I wasn't doing this and that for her.
Right.
And I literally, Matt, could not get up.
Yeah, like back surgery will do that to you.
Yeah. Like I couldn't get up. And I remember I remember her leaving.
Yeah.
And being very kind of sentimental and emotional and but like how could you have been this way and then opiated continued to play like 15 years later. And I remember it meaning as much to me then as it did back in like 1990.
Sure.
And I still love the song today. I've probably on my Apple Music, I think I have 5 different live versions of it.
Nice.
And I listen to it all the time and I never get sick of it. And it's just, it's been there sort of along the road of my life.
Right.
I guess is what I would say.
It's a beaut.
So opiated is also in my.
Should we continue the snake draft? Do you want to stay on your, we might as well at this point. Otherwise I'm going to run out way sooner. You want to hit us with a second one here?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, I got to put it in here because it's not like number one or anything, but I think as I explained earlier that not being a lyricist, I'm not the biggest guy that feels like lyrics mean something, but man, I can appreciate telling a good story.
Right.
And I also know, and this happens a lot in wrestling. It's why I love wrestling. I'm not going to get into wrestling on the show, but when certain music hits, and especially in wrestling, they do this because it makes you feel a certain way immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes songs kind of build to a crescendo. And when it hits that apex, it makes you feel this rush of energy like nothing else can do. Music is able to make you feel that way. And for me, the combination of the lyrics, the storytelling, how many different versions I've heard of The Hip and Gord Downie do this live and tell different stories in the middle of the song. And when it gets to the apex, I don't care if I hear it seven times a day for the next 20 years. When it gets to the apex, I am sort of at that rush with them.
Ready to climax.
Yeah. See, I was actually going to say that earlier. And yeah. I'm like, no, this is a serious show.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
TCA almost never is going to get through a full episode without making people uncomfortable.
Okay. Nautical Disaster.
Oh.
Is a song for me.
He just took my number one.
No. Really?
Love that song, man.
Okay. Well, I'm anxious then to hear if you're in no particular order. Yeah. Because for me, the lyrics are incredible.
Yes.
The storytelling in that is like second to none. And it also.
And it's all over the map.
Right.
Like now we're just. I'm sorry. We're just both into this song now. But like it starts with this off the coast of France and you've got these flashbacks. And then he's like, I'm awake and I'm on the. I'm not making any sense. Love that song.
You have to keep going to pay attention to that song to feel like all the things that.
Yeah.
That happen. But when it builds, it's got this. And certain bands can do this so well. That it can build to a moment, and when that moment happens in Nautical Disaster,
yeah,
when they kicked off the pant leg and headed for home, like I'm headed for home with them.
Right.
Like I'm on the freaking lifeboat with them.
Amazing song.
And I'm kicking somebody off the pant leg because there isn't room for you. And there's room for me, and I got to get home, and I got to get safe.
Yeah. Anyway, Susan.
It's,
if you like a conversation.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, man.
It's just
so good.
Okay, we have one.
Yeah. And it's been my favorite maybe all – like since the first time I heard it, and I think the first time I ever heard it was live at a show in Belleville, actually, I believe. But I could be wrong on that.
I like the way you downplay – well, show in Belleville. Like, yeah, well, I feel that way too.
So I don't know that this will make it into the rest of my – whatever. But like – when I went to Loyalist in 05, 06, 06, 07, and at the beginning of both years, the student council or whatever the hell they called it there would put out a survey of like different activities you'd like to see, different things that are going to go on throughout the year. Mm-hmm. They would say, they would give you this big long list of Canadian acts, like give us some bands that check these off that you think you'd like to see if we could get them. And it would, at the time, it would be like Default.
Right.
Right. Or, anyway, Default is the one that comes to mind.
Well,
Headley before he ended up being
Default answer. Yeah,
yeah, there you go.
And all in both years, it would say in brackets in capital letters with multiple exclamation marks: "Do not say The Hip. We cannot get The Hip."
But why? You're only 45 minutes from Kingston,
right? So that's 05, 06, 06, 07. In June of 08, the student council doesn't get them. But The Hip are going to play in Belleville. So the group of guys that I lived with and all our buddies that we'd hung out with, everybody's coming back to town for this, right? It'll be our one-year reunion from leaving school. And The Hip are going to be there, and it's going to be amazing. And they played Nautical Disaster that night, maybe better than I've ever heard it performed. And I just fucking loved it, man. And so I'm not trying to trample on your love for it.
No, this is part of how it goes.
That's the one that stands out to me as the most memorable performance, is being back in Belleville with all those people that you spent all those hours with, wishing The Hip were going to come, and they finally showed up. So good shit, man.
Can we find out why The Hip decided to play in Belleville? You're better than that.
You're
better than that.
It was called, very originally named, Big Music Fest. And
great.
Sam Roberts was the opening band.
Of course he was.
Sam Roberts was always the opening band. I've seen The Hip, like I said, 11 times. I bet you five of them were opened by Sam Roberts. So,
not the biggest Sam Roberts guy.
I don't mind the three or four big hits. The rest of it, I have no idea. But I always find is like I'm trying to get that last one more beer out of the line before you get back for the actual hip. Like it's fine background music for that.
Yeah. And doesn't Sam Roberts have a beer with Spearhead in?
Oh, does he? Could be
Kingston.
I'm not familiar.
I think so.
Okay.
I stand to be corrected, but I do believe Sam Roberts.
I feel my life is passing me by.
You're better voice than me. But I think they do. I'm pretty sure Spearhead has a Sam Roberts beer. Our Lady Peace is the band that I saw. Like, I went to Laurier, and all the Canadian bands would come through, right?
Sure.
And at Laurier in Kitchener, you had Waterloo.
Alexis on Fire. That was the other big one.
I loved Alexis on Fire. I still love Alexis.
They played Loyalist, man, the Shark Tank pub.
I love Alexis on Fire. But the cool thing about going to university in Kitchener was that Laurier is literally down the street, like closer to University of Waterloo than U of O is to Carleton.
100%.
And then Guelph is 20 minutes down the road.
Yep.
Western is an hour down the road. McMaster's an hour down the road. And the bands would go to all the universities.
Yep.
So I loved Our Lady Peace. So I just, I probably saw them like, not 50, but I don't know how many times I saw them. I easily, the most, because if they would come and do the circuit, I would see them six times. Right? Like I would go to every show. But this is an Our Lady Peace.
No. Maybe next time.
So
Our Lady Peace was at the Dome in 03 for SARS-Stock. The prequel. Nautical Disaster, man. Great tune.
We kind of agreed there at number three.
Yeah.
So, well, not at my third, but like as your third one on the list, my third one on the list.
Yep.
So, okay. What else you got? You got two left.
Yeah. And so one of them, this comes again from the Belleville days. And this is when I've already sort of started to like the hip, but they're not yet my favorite band. It wasn't until I got there and you're living in a house with five guys and you're all getting, used to each other's music and bands and whatever. And it's late night partying and smoking up in the basement and whatever else. Cordelia was a song my buddy George would put on all the time.
It's an unbelievable song.
It really is.
In fact, I had an exercise, not to cut you off, but I had an exercise where I texted a bunch of people before this show to say, can you just give me your top five list to see how different
Sure, kind
it
of
is,
canvas. Like what,
yeah. Of the three people that I did, two of them have Cordelia on the list.
Nice.
I don't, but I feel like I should have. It's every song you bring up, I'm like, I should have had that. But Nautical Disaster, we agreed on. But Cordelia, go ahead.
Well, it's just, I had, and even the nights when I thought I'm going to shut it down early, the room that everybody would go in to smoke, and I wasn't at the time a huge smoker. Now and then on the weekend, right, with them, if they were passing one around, fine. But that wasn't really my thing. I was more into beer and whatever else, so. But they would all go into this one kind of back room and smoke. And that room happened to be right under my bedroom in the house.
Okay.
And so I could always tell like who was leading the party at that point or whatever. Because there was at the time there was a CD player. And you'd hear that kind of music that starts Cordelia. And then there's a moment early in the song where it stops. And you just hear the drum goes and he goes, yeah. And you're off and running. And I would hear the song start, and then without fail, when Gord would yell, yeah, so would my buddy George. And that was, all right, I got time for one more. I'm going to get up and go downstairs and see what they're up to or whatever. It like, sounds like a good time down there. So that one is the one, maybe more than any other song, reminds me of those college days, just hanging out with the boys. And we would go, six, we saw the hip at Old Fort York in Toronto.
Wow, that'd be cool.
It was a cool venue. Out of the 11 times I saw the hip, it's probably in my bottom two for set lists. Like, I just wasn't feeling it. But the venue was amazing. Going with that group was amazing. It was just all these same guys who hung out together and drank beers and whatever else all the time down and during the college days. And so that song takes me back to 21 McPhee Street in Belleville. I'm going to have to ask Zach to take a drive by, see what's happening there.
21 McPhee Street.
Yep. Live about a block and a half from a Krabby Joe's that had 29-cent wings on Tuesday nights. That got us through some tough times down there.
What a life. Can we bring that back?
That'd be amazing. So Cordelia is the song that that makes me think of Belleville and my college days.
Man,
yeah.
What a tune.
Yeah.
Your list is so great. And I think my list is going to be really good.
There's
but your
no way to do this poorly.
Your list is so good. Just because I can't leave it off. As a guy that I want to be able to put this as well as I possibly can. I had a good upbringing. Like everyone's got their stories, right?
Sure.
About what's happened to them in their life. And at some point, when I was 9 years old, my best friend became my stepbrother. I'll just leave you with that. And
ask me
at another time.
Okay.
But we all have kind of ways that we grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make it very clear that I had enough and, you know, more than some maybe less fortunate people.
Right.
But in saying that, I didn't have what a lot of my friends did.
Right.
And I grew up in a bit of a, I would say, affluent. Markham was a town that was sort of divided between Markham and, at the time, Unionville. And
right.
Unionville is where the rich kids lived. And Markham was like the... You know, the...
In the ghetto?
Yeah. No, it wasn't really.
I know it wasn't.
It wasn't really, but...
Comparatively speaking.
And I'll say this with all, sort of love. The president of the Ottawa Redblacks, Adrian Sierra, I played hockey against. He played in Unionville.
Mm.
I played in Markham. We didn't get along.
No. It was the Hawks versus the Ducks.
I get along with him much better these days.
Yeah, I bet.
And he also went to the Catholic school, and I played high school hockey against him too. And it just sucked that he was just better than me.
Yeah, that always sucks.
And his teams were better. But they had more money.
Yeah.
But then they were probably more skilled. So, okay. So all I'm saying is that we all live in our own world where we grow up and you only know what you know.
100%.
And I had, looking back, I had plenty growing up. But at the time, I was a little bit envious of other people that had more.
Right.
And I didn't, I mean, I wish I understood it better at the time, but there was points where you were like, okay, other people, all my friends and all people, they're getting and they're doing these things and they're getting this stuff and I'm not. How come? Right? You ask as a kid,
sure.
How come? And it's a long way of getting to the luxury.
Ooh.
From the tragically hip, which I can only tell you whether it would be true now. I knew it that point to be true, where I understood as a kid, like I was I'm gonna say smart kid. I was just gonna pat myself on the back there. I was a very, I thought a lot as a kid, and I liked to think about different scenarios, and I understood that I had enough. But at some points I wanted more. Mm-hmm. And maybe I wasn't actually looking at taking advantage of the things that I did have instead of being envious of the things that I didn't have. And so the luxury from the Tragically Hip was a song that always reminded me or put me back in my place, or that they're talking about soft water and a color TV at a motel, and they can't enjoy the luxuries of those things,
right?
Because of where they are in their lives. And it always reminded me that I had soft water growing up. I had a color TV.
Right.
And I'm not saying that that's what the song's necessarily about. I'm just telling you what it meant to me at the time.
Right.
And it reminded me, and it also got me, it also hits a point where I kind of get a little emotional when I hear it. It reminds me to go back and go, there are people that do think that, and having a color TV at a motel and soft water and a shower and food and the things that are essential in life, you have all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain people that don't have those things. And that song always reminded me that I had more, and stop being envious of the kids that and the parents and the families that have more than we do, because we have enough. And it was very powerful to me, very, very powerful. Because you make songs at that age about what your brain is making them about, not what necessarily they're actually about.
Right.
It just meant so much to me. And when it sort of builds into the chorus, man, I kind of melt a little bit. So has to be. I can't leave it out. It's just too significant as a portion of my life.
So even as we've been sitting here talking, I've been trying to decide whether to make this my last one. Because as I said, Nautical Disaster would have been my last one, but
yeah,
we hit it earlier. So I've been trying to go, should I leave it there? Should I go somewhere else? Is there anything else that climbs up? But as we sit here today, I think this is still the one.
Okay.
And it doesn't have anywhere near the power that some of the earlier. It's just one that makes me feel happy. It's one that I like. It's just, you know, one of your favorite songs. Sometimes there is no deeper meaning, right? And it's Grace 2, which is a song I've seen them lead off with multiple times. It has that drum beat to start, and it slowly builds. And sometimes they let it take forever to build. Like that show in Bob Cajun, they let off with it. And it had been calling for rain all day. And it spit a couple times. Actually, on the drive up to Bob Cajun in the morning, it poured rain. We were terrified that that was our future. But it stayed cloudy and overcast the whole time. So as that drum beat is coming in, and they're starting to strum on the guitar on Grace 2, and Gord is yelling, no sunburns today, we're all winners, right? Like just trying to make the best of it and stuff like that. And I'll never forget it. A friend of mine who was there, and she has albinism. And I remember her screaming, speak for yourself!
That's so funny.
But
never going to please everyone.
No, exactly. There's one person in the crowd not feeling it right now. And I should mention, just because her name's come up here, but she just won the Para Pan Am Games gold medal.
I was just going to say, I thought you
qualified for Paris 2024. So she's off to her fifth and final Paralympics. So congratulations to her. But she was there, and that was really funny. And it just, but there's other times where, you know, that same friend and I went and saw them here in Ottawa at Blues Fest in 2015, I believe it was. They were touring on the anniversary of Fully Completely. And we had gone to the beer stand, whatever. And we're running back, and he's opening with
the beer truck.
Yeah. They're opening with it again, Grace 2, and it's one of her favorite songs.
They opened a lot of shows.
It was a great song to open, the way it picks up and builds. And so we've got our beers, and we're like running back, and we're near the back because we've just been to the beer. And she's like 5'5 and whatever. And she can like squeeze up between a couple of people. And then she like reaches back and tries to drag me. I'm 6'3", 240, whatever at the time. And I don't slide through these little holes the same. And now
these
little
nooks and crannies.
Right. And those two guys that you just pushed through probably were annoyed, but looked and went, it's a woman, or whatever. They're not giving me a pass, right?
Nope.
So I had to tell her. Now, she did manage to navigate us pretty close to the front, but she pissed off a lot of people doing it.
Yeah.
But there's been other times, like so many times, I've seen them open with that song.
Mm-hmm.
And they played it. I saw them twice on the final tour, once down in Toronto with two of my oldest friends and guys who got me into the hip, and he played it then. And this is when we all know he's dying, right? Like, he's staring into the camera, and he's sort of, you know, just screaming at the end. There's a couple of that, you know, a couple of lyrics that he just screams out at the very end. Here, now, right? And then he turns and he mouths to the camera, I love you, which that's not Gord, right? He's kind of weird up there. He's kind of cool up there. He's doing his weird dancing, which is...
Yeah, he's his own dude.
He's his own dude. And so I'll never forget that. Like, it was a song that I loved. The lyrics are great. The song is great. And it popped up so many times when I got to see them. And never once was it performed poorly while I was in attendance for it. The secret rules of engagement are hard to endorse when the appearance of conflict meets the appearance of force. Just the lyrics to that, everything about that song is so good. And so, like I said, there's no one story. There's no one moment. I can't get enough of that tune.
It's a great song.
Yeah. They all are, man.
It's a great song. So speaking of which, I guess I'll transition into...
And I just a quick shout out. Local band called The Twin Flames do a cover of it that has some... Like they do Aboriginal music,
yeah,
and they sing this song.
I know them.
Yeah, they do. Well, not everybody will, right? So they do a gorgeous version of it, and they incorporate, like, it's picked up in the pace a little bit, and they got a guy in the background doing that. I don't know the proper term, the Aboriginal throat singing, right?
Yeah.
That it's a great cover too. So if people haven't heard that, you know what? You're gonna hear it. That's what we're gonna end the show with today. I'll play that as the outro music.
Very good.
Yeah,
I love how in radio podcasting terms we've made outro a word. It's not but we've all
but you knew exactly what it meant,
and that's communication.
Yeah,
that's all I ever say to people. They're like, that's not a word. Did you understand?
Yeah, exactly
what I was trying to say. So if you did, shut up. So
which I was polite enough not to say to you.
Yeah. Which is because we're doing a show like this. Usually on other shows you would.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
I would.
No, we're bonding here instead of locking horns on every little thing.
I would take it. So when people ask me what, because it often comes up, right? Like, what's the best concert you've ever seen? Mm-hmm. For very purposeful reasons, I do not include the Tragically Hip in Ottawa, the second last show before the Kingston show.
Were you there?
I was there.
I was there. Second row on the floor.
I was not second row on the floor.
Can I just quick, I'll give you the Cole's notes on this. I went to the Toronto show.
It's a Tragically Hip show.
I know, but
you
I'm interrupting.
You can tell a Tragically Hip story.
I was on at the middle of the three shows in Toronto. It was the second show, but they added a third because of the demand. Or it was the final show in Toronto, but they added the third. So
yeah.
I was at the middle one. And I had gone with the two guys who had got me into the band, and it was amazing. It was a great show. I ended up running into some other friends who we had no idea. We knew each other was going, but we didn't ask where you were sitting. Maybe we'll meet up afterwards. They ended up being one row behind us and like eight seats to the left,
right,
which was weird. Anyway, I go home from that show, and I'm like, that's it. I've seen my favorite band for the final time. Had a great time. I've made my peace with it. That was goodbye, right? The next morning, my sister texts me, who lives here in Ottawa, and she's like, hey, I got two friends who are selling floor seats for Thursday in Ottawa. Do you want to go? And a crucial detail here is they were asking $1,200 for the pair. And I said, no, not at that price. But all, like, my sister was a fan, but not in my opinion, and she'd correct me maybe, I didn't think like a diehard fan. So what I said to her was, if you're offering to go because you think I want to go again, or I'm good. But if you want to go because you want to go, we can talk about this. But I don't have $1,200 or $600 after just paying for the Toronto one and whatever. So I said, and she said, no, I'd like to go. I'd like to see them. And so I said, well, let's agree on a number here ourselves. And I think we came up with we would each pay $350 or something like that. Go to your friend, say we got $700 for. Spend the rest of the week. This is what she was to tell her friend, trying to sell them for $1,200. If you can't find anybody, come back to us. And her friend just went, yeah, no, $700's fine, and took it right there. And so there's a part of me that's like, oh, awesome, I'm going to see him again. But a part of me is like, oh, I didn't really think they'd take it, right? Like,
right.
And so ended up going to that show, and that was where I ended up seeing them twice on that tour. But that Ottawa show, the second last one they ever did, was
amazing too, man.
So when people ask me, I don't list it.
Right. Sorry, that was the point. You didn't list it.
No, but it was not a concert. It was
a wake.
Yeah, it was a religious experience. It was a wake. It was a goodbye. It was the most emotion I've ever been at in any public form ever. Like, it was okay to cry. It was okay to weep and beyond cry because everybody else was doing the same. I don't remember a lot of it, but
I remember the last song they played.
No.
Because I remember, and it comes up in my Facebook memories. That's the only reason I remember
it. What was it?
I just remember posting, the last song I will ever see the Hit play live is Poets. It's a good song, but probably not would have
not
been the
mine.
One. That
I
don't mind the song, and it was a good one to kind of wrap things up on, I guess, like the pace of it and everything. But yeah, it's not one that if you'd have asked me to pick the last time I'd ever hear them play live, I wouldn't have put that on there.
But I just remember how I felt during that show.
Right.
And remembering, I probably will never feel like this again. I watched the show on television.
Same. The Kingston finals.
I know some people that were there. Beyond anything I can ever explain to people who don't know or love the Tragically Hip, what they meant and what it was like as them saying goodbye.
Yep.
In real time. It was a kind of a new experience. Like, hey, I'm dying. I'm going to die soon, but here we are, and I'm going to
one more time. Here we go,
and this is going to happen.
Yeah.
So, I remember leaving that show, thinking, I'm not necessarily a history buff like other people are, but I remember leaving that show like, God damn it, he's done it. He is going to get me more into the history of this country because of him.
Yeah.
Because of what he...
That's what he liked to write about.
...has done.
Yeah.
And...
Tom Thompson came paddling by. Pretty sure it was him.
I think when you say to people, like, if you know the Hip whatsoever, you know music, and you just say you can't be fond of living in the past... Because if you are, there's no way that you're going to last.
Yep.
Right after a late-breaking story on the CBC, like, you know it's Wheat Kings. So Wheat Kings is not there.
Prime ministers.
Wheat Kings is not there in my top.
It's not far outside of mine.
But it's not far, and I wanted to bring it up because it is emblematic of the history. That song became a little bit bigger. It's one of those songs that it can instantly start playing and almost everyone you know around can sing along with it.
Every dink with an acoustic guitar in every pub you've ever been in knows Wheat Kings.
Right. And play it so poorly.
Yes.
It does
to the point where it's almost insulting.
It's a disgrace to the Tragically Hip. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Yeah.
But I understand where they want to go because it's their respect to...
Of course.
But do it a little bit better, people. But that song to me jumps, even though it's not my favorite song ever by the Hip, the song and the meaning and the lyrics, it jumps ahead from just a song to kind of what the Hip were all about.
Yeah.
And I think it should be pointed out that, you know, I remember them doing that song at that show. I don't remember much about the show other than me crying and that song, but I remember the song.
Right.
And I just remember how powerful it was after he passed and what if, hey, do you know the Hip? A lot of people, Americans, they don't know the Hip. Here's a pretty good song to sort of tell you what they're about.
Yeah. An entry point.
Yeah. And that would be Wheat Kings.
Yeah.
Because it was just Canadiana at its, like everything about it is Canadiana. But I'll wrap
campfire song on Victoria Day.
But now it's again some
yep.
brutal guitar player leading Wheat Kings and everybody else singing along.
I was more thinking
The stereo was playing in the background.
Okay, okay, good. So I just wanted to mention that. Yeah. Not my top five, but I do think it's very emblematic of what the band is about. And for the last song for me, again, doesn't mean it's number one, but I can't leave it out. I actually have – I thought I'd get to this earlier. I have zero story with this song.
Okay.
Zero. Like there isn't
– Yeah, sometimes it just grabs you and that's all there is to it.
This is – if you had to ask me – what the perfect song is, this would be as close to it as I could get.
It's Raining Man. Sorry.
What? That you apologize? Hallelujah? Is that what I should say? Yeah. To Raining Man? Hallelujah?
Are you suggesting that's not the perfect song?
Yes. Yes, I am.
You are suggesting that, okay.
Yes, I am. If I broke down for me everything that I would put into a perfect song, this – I'm sure there are others out there from other bands, but this is as close to a perfect song as I think you can find. It's not the most rah-rah. It's not the most – it just – from the lyrics to the way it's performed – to the guitar, and I really want to emphasize that sometimes in music, I call it less is everything, but people call it less is more. But sometimes less is everything. Flamenco to me is as close to a perfect song as you can get. If you did it any faster, if you did it any, it's got to be the exact tone.
Yeah, any heavier, any softer, any different tempo, anything about it changes the whole.
The whole thing goes.
Yeah.
But they did it perfect with all of those things that you just mentioned. The guitar is so perfect. The lyrics are so great. And the prostitute teaching you how to take a compliment is just such a perfect line.
Yeah.
In the perfect song. Maybe a prostitute could teach you how to take a compliment. It's just so deep, but yet so not.
Yeah.
And like you get it. I love everything about this song. And that's the reason I'm kind of putting it at this level, because I don't have an emotional attachment to the song.
Yeah.
There's nothing from my past that is attaching me other than everything I love about music is pretty much involved in that song. And I would put that song up against almost any song to go, all right, well, this is the one that I'm presenting. I love that song and just think it's genius.
I'm glad we did this, man. Oh, a little walk down memory lane so on a bunch fun. Of fronts. Yeah.
So, yeah, like just to give you even examples of people that I talk to that, as I knock over my empty beer can. But I said to these people, like, give me your list. I'm like, well, it'll be not the same as mine, but like here's one: Blow It High Dough, Cordelia,
nice.
At the 100th Meridian,
oh, yeah.
Grace 2,
yep.
And Gift Shop.
Oh, that's a good song.
Right. And I look at all these I look at all these lists
from high up above
and go, yeah, that is a great song.
I can fit them in.
Like can I somehow manage to get and I loved Locked in the Trunk of a Car. I love that song. I think it's an unbelievable song. Can't believe it didn't make it into mine.
Well, basically anything off Fully Complete, like 50 Mission Cap is a banger at any concert, right? And how high up, like Ahead by a Century. I know that's kind of a popular radio act. Yeah, love that song.
It got played too much,
yeah.
But it's still a great song.
It's a great song.
Yeah. I love Every Time You Go. I love that song.
Yeah.
And again, like Boots or Hearts could play and like almost anybody that's Canadian could sing along.
Yep.
38 years old.
Lake Fever is incredible.
Yeah. 38 years old. Everyone could sing along.
Yep.
When the Weight Comes Down. Love the tune.
Yeah.
So many that just didn't make it. But sometimes you got to narrow it down.
Well, even, there's stuff off the later ones that I like. My sister told me, not the one that I went to the concert with, that she had only one hip song she ever liked. And the title is escaping her. I've been meaning to call you. It's poppy. It's upbeat. It's whatever. It was much later. Like, I think that was off the 2009 album. But
right.
I like it because I like all their stuff and she likes it. Right. So it's little things like that sometimes that just grab onto you a bit.
But I want to make it clear that this band, I don't think I realized at the time when you're just enjoying the music, how relevant they were going to be 20, 30, 40, 50 years later. And I think sometimes when people, I'll say my age, not our age, my age, and you listen to your parents and they talk about, you know, the greats of the 60s and the 70s, mm-hmm. and no one will ever be like, I don't know, Burton Cummings and and the Guess Who and,
right.
and whoever, like from the 60s and the 70s and Neil Young and some of the people that came.
I love me some Neil Young.
I like Neil Young too, but.
I know what you're saying.
When I was growing up, you're told, especially some of the Canadian people, that these people will be icons and the best that ever was in the history of music in this country. And I get it that when you're older, you always think back to the time that you were young and that was the...
Of course, the pinnacle of everything that was great was when I decided in my childhood...
Right. That, and that nothing could ever come along that could be better.
Right.
Is there a Canadian band that has been better or more iconic than the Hip since they...
Probably not more iconic.
Started and...
It's funny, right? And I think to a certain degree they liked it and they talked about it from time to time. But like Saturday night, they could be playing 45,000 people at the Dome and then cross the border into Buffalo. And if it wasn't flooded, but that's a bad example, but like into Boston or something and play for 350.
Right.
It just didn't quite translate. They had their fans down there. People know, not everybody, they're not a well-known band down there, but they had fans in the U.S., but it was one of those things that didn't really cross borders. And I think that was a big part of it was we loved it. And
it was
other
ours.
People were fine with it, but we loved it.
No,
it was ours.
It
spoke
ours.
Our language. It made references. That stuff you said a few minutes about the CBC and, you know, our parents' prime ministers and these sorts of references, those don't travel. And they do, but they work here, right? So
I was in the States because my uncle lives in Florida. And I remember talking to people saying, no, we just... had, or I think it was even coming up, like I hadn't even been yet. It might have been before that the Tragically Hip were playing their last concert because the lead singer was dying.
Yeah.
And they were going to show this on
national television,
on national public television, commercial free.
CBC gave away the closing ceremonies of the Olympics to Sportsnet. That's their cash cow. The Olympics is what the CBC makes money on. That's their big sports thing. And they said, this will be bigger. It was on the last night of Rio 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave that broadcast away to another network because they went, this will be bigger. This will matter more. Nowhere else on earth. Everyone else in the world who was watching anything that the whole world was watching the closing ceremonies of the Olympics up here. We were watching a hockey arena in Kingston, Ontario.
Yeah.
That's unique. That's special.
And that's when I was telling people that they were going to have a concert that would have been like the equivalent of being on, I don't know, in the States, like PBS is a bad example because it's a...
Well, CBS, NBC, ABC, one of the networks.
Yeah, but they're not publicly funded like the CBC is.
Well, fair enough. But it's like, network, over-the-air, national television.
So, but imagine a concert from a band because the lead singer is dying being on NBC.
Yeah.
Commercial free.
Right.
For 3 hours, and the whole country is going to gather around their televisions. And they're like, the Tragically What?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm going to go watch. I'm going to go be with all of my country.
Yeah.
And I'm going to watch this, and I'm going to be with them during this time, and I don't care if you care.
Right. This was ours.
Because it was ours.
Yep.
And I don't think, I know this is, there's always possibilities of something to happen in the future. To me, I don't care what argument you come at me with about the Guess Who or any Canadian artist of all time.
Nickelback.
The Tragically Hip will be the most influential Canadian band of all time, period.
At least here.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't care what, yeah. if Justin
well,
Bieber.
Well, Rush would have been around
but,
the world.
But not even close.
No, no. I'm with you. But, here, but around the world, there would be bigger ones. But yeah.
Yeah, but I don't. Whether I Justin Bieber, Celine Dion, or whatever they.
Justin Bieber was one of those douchebags trying to play Wheat Kings on his acoustic guitar at a show in Singapore or something. It was terrible.
But whatever worldwide success they had. The most influential band ever in this country.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Tragically Hip.
Agreed.
No. This has been fun. I don't know how we're going to, talk about Sloan next week. Or no.
See what the swollen members are up to.
Can I tell you the story when Maestro Fresh West came to my high school? It was awesome.
Yeah.
He said, I'm fabulously rich. Come on, let's go. She kind of bit her lip. Geez, I don't know. But I can guarantee there'll be no knock on the door. I'm a total.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tallcan Audio on your favorite podcast app. Of force, but I can guarantee.